Hello and welcome back to Broadcast Urantia. My name is Jay. Today we're going to pick up where we left off last week with Michael from Hawaii. Hi Michael, are you on the line?
Yes, I am.
How are you?
I'm fine. How are you?
I'm not bad.
Oh, that's good.
I believe last week you were at the point where you might have left the classroom environment and they were taking you somewhere. Maybe you could sort of rewind a little bit and continue on for us. That would be...
Well, yeah, a little interjection here is that there are areas in which I did not talk about, which was probably somewhere in between, because I entered the classroom several times.
I see.
The first time was just to meet the Dano once more, who introduced himself as a teacher. He said he was a Dano. Did I speak about that?
A little bit, but please go ahead.
I thought he was talking, introducing himself as Daniel, and I said, "Oh yeah, Daniel," like the prophet Daniel. And he says, "Oh no, it's a Dano. Well, anyway, I left out some areas in terms of the tour. I'd like to give a little heads up on the idea of the tour. It seems as if there is a type of sorting going on in the tour where it depends on your level of curiosity or awareness or understanding, and it just depends where you end up.
Mm-hmm.
I covered the move through the earlier garden, and then from the garden moving on through introduced to at least two different species, and then moving on from another to another point, which time I was told to wait and observe. And then there were more than one opportunity to wait, but in different areas. The first one was in observing a large group of people meeting the Dano, and then having him walk away. Now I remained there waiting for him. During that part which I remained there, I was taken again and moved around. My guide returned, and I told him that I had met someone, and then he human looking in, and says, "Yeah, I have to take you to another place." And I said, "Oh, fine." And then he said, "Okay, we're going to take you to this." Anyway, just followed him, and he kind of walked me to around not too far. I don't remember a long walk, but anyway, he ended up again meeting more individuals that looked just like him. This would be like the Zeta type, you know, what we call gray, and they were uniformed, and they expressed to me a procedure that they needed to do, and they said that we desire to do a procedure on you that would help your work and help us work with you. And I said, "Okay, are you going to hurt me? Or hurt us?" Because apparently there was another female there, right, a woman. And I said hello to her. She just said hello. And we didn't introduce ourselves because both of us were pretty caught up in the, being there with all these alien beings. Basically, that's what they were. Non-human, intelligent entities that were nice, really nice, but were scary in some areas when they ask things like that. Well, in any case, I did ask if the procedure was going to be, hard. He said, "Oh no, it's very easy, it won't hurt you, and it will require you to come with us." And I said, "Made sure you're not going to hurt us." And he said, "Oh, I said yes." He said, "I guess I went in first and basically just ended up like sitting like something very similar to like a dentist chair. And they did the procedure, which seemed like it was nothing. And it was a type of implant, but something very deep, they said, is within, in my head.
Mm-hmm.
But I left that point. And I believe I went out from there and sat down and said, wait. And the woman came out, and she was zoned out. I mean, just absolutely zoned out. I remember being angry when I looked at them, and I said, I sat her down, and I told them, you promised you wouldn't hurt us. She's not the same. She didn't say anything to me. And they said, oh, she'll be just fine. We didn't hurt her, but she struggled intensely, and we had to put her in this stasis and allow her to not hurt herself. So that's why she'll be okay in a little while. So I said, okay, well, kept looking, and I was still pretty disturbed. And, you know, put my hand over her eyes and, you know, over across her face. Basically catatonic sitting there. Anyway, then I was taken and moved over to another position, into another room. And in this room, I was there, and could observe people walking back and forth through what looked like a large picture window. But when I entered the room, I couldn't see into the room. It was surprisingly perhaps like a one-way viewing. So I watched a different beings walking past. And the very first ones that came up past me were human-looking, but they had very, very tall skulls. Their head was very tall. And yet their face looked very human. The complexion was what looked like it would be equivalent to Caucasian. And the face was covered with a breathing mask. And but they did have very long earlobes, very long earlobes that literally went below their chin line. Yet, if you were to cover that up, they would look like pretty regular people. Put a tall hat on them and be okay. And I was wondering what was under their face mask. Well, anyway, they went into another room that was adjoining where I was, and they went behind a panel, and they were doing some adjustments and talking with each other. There were three of them. Both of them, all three of them were in an active work behind this panel. And I was waving at them. I wanted their attention, and they didn't seem to care. And they looked up. One of them looked up at me, and he still didn't really acknowledge me much. But he kept looking up toward me, looking at the results of whatever they were doing. And they nodded their head. It was good. Very good, and they were pleased. Two of them walked away, leaving that one other individual there who was very pleased at his results. And he then looked at me square on and let me look at him face on. And he, all three of them had removed their face mask. And they, what was revealed were their faces, and they were essentially human. And a couple of them, they look really Jewish to me. And it's interesting that the Jewish dig sites that were perhaps tombs. But their earlobes would have been covered, and their helmets were tall. So apparently this, I draw a conclusion, in my own opinion, that I feel that these particular types have been involved in planetary affairs for a long while, a long time.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, getting back to the point, he then turned sideways and let me see him from the side and stayed there in profile. And I could see him, it's as if he wanted me to remember his appearance. Get it. And it's a little different from what appears to be like the distorted skulls that have been found in Peru,
mm-hmm.
because it didn't seem to have any type of band, look like what would be banding, and the back of their heads were not, you know, essentially flattened, and they were actually so rounder, and just that their heads were very tall. But when you look at them from the front, they look the same, very tall, conical, elongated skull. And they left. And then another group came through. They were all dressed in purple. The purple robes they were wearing are very, very beautiful, because most of them didn't have very dressy clothes on, uniforms, tight fitting. But these robes were like, you know, loosely covered over them. And their hands, I believe, were hidden inside as they walked, as if they're at them in this, you know, crossing their arms and putting their hands in their sleeves, and they all walked in a single file. As they passed me, they became aware that I was there, and apparently they were, that room was using some kind of one-way technology, not a mirror, but a one-way effect, because on the outside it would be just this white wall, and looking from where I was, a clear view of everything. When they came, when these group of special beings, very powerful telepathically, realized that I was looking at them, they all stopped, and I said, and then they changed their appearance somewhat to a little bit more, something that would be a little bit more what I would be used to do. And then I replied to them, probably in my own thought, saying something like, "That's okay. You can just allow. I can look at you just the way you are. I'm not afraid." And then they just said, "Okay," and they turned back to how they looked. And how they looked were very different. Their heads were very dome-like. They had a very two major lobes. Very big, and bald on their bald head, but the texture of the skin over their head was very wrinkled, giving me the impression that their brains were outside of their head.
Mm-hmm.
And thinking, wow, these guys have brains outside of their head. But then there was kind of a reply, no, it's not. And I said, fine. And then they just continued on and walked away. They went on down in front of me, and apparently I lost track of where they went, as far as they went around somewhere. And then the door opened, and my guide came back in, and he says, I'll take you somewhere. So he took me to a viewport, and basically like a balcony, and that's where I got to see the inside. The expansive space inside of the New Jerusalem. And it was grand, it was wide, and there were essentially the inner wall was essentially filled with what looked like windows, and some areas were just not was just covered, and some areas were windowed again, and it went on and on and on. Oftentimes I look at the our city, go to visit, let's say, New York, Tokyo, Hong Kong, and look at all of those cities and try to imagine how limited they were and how small in scale even our tallest buildings are in comparison, because I now realize that I was looking at the inside of this spherical structure, and the exterior structure, essentially looking like a hollowed out egg, and all of the inner walls of this, the shell, the outer walls, would be where all of the activity occurs, and all of the space in the rooms, which are tremendous and quite deep, because again, they could fit in gigantic craft and things like that. And there was a little bit of a wispy cloud above, and I looked up to see where there was like a sun or a place where the light came from, but there wasn't. It just be there. Light was all over the place, and yet it still had a little wispy cloud, a small wispy cloud. And I commented, "Was, well, you have clouds in here." And it says, "Oh, part of our adjustment to the air in here, what you're breathing." And then I looked down and it seemed, "Wow, there's smoke coming out of that place right there." This is, "No, that's part of the function for to keep this inner atmosphere functional." And I said, "Okay." I noticed a little bit over, because it's relatively close, and maybe would be considered like a block away of looking. And I'm seeing someone that appears at the window, and I notice, I wave at them, and they wave back, and then they walk away. So I said, "Well, people in there." And I said, "Oh, yeah, they're all filled with rooms for people to dwell in. It's not, they're not all full. There are a lot of vacant." So I said, "Oh, okay. I mean, this—it looks like easily you could, you know, put all the people in any of the major cities easily into all of the what was there, what I could see as far as windows." It went on and on and on, on and on and on.
Mm-hmm.
Just a lot of the interior windowed areas that were dwelling. Could see some deviations, some areas which were not. Anyway, sort of hard to describe, but the size of it was immense, looking into it. And then I said, we've got to go. So I said, "Okay." So I said, "All right." So we went, and then we intercepted the same guys in purple again.
Mm-hmm.
And they had returned and wanted me to go with them, and I was told by my guide that I couldn't go. And I said, "Oh, I want you to come with me, because I don't know who these people are, and this is I cannot go with you." And I said, "Oh, can I, you know?" So he went and checked one more time, and he says, "Yeah, I can go with you, but I cannot be with you in where they're taking you." And I says, "Okay." So went over there with them and followed them. They were all, again, walking in single file. And we followed in single file. We were on the levitators, round disc that you just ride on. Pretty much the whole area from the beginning to the end, you could use levitators. You could walk also, but levitator discs were always available. And they sort of, most of the time, as far as I could see, there were a lot of use with the single file. So we followed that open space that I was made aware of, this grand open space, and it looked like I was going to fall down. Like, they told me, don't worry, you won't fall. Then I said, oh, well, this is maybe like a skateboard, or maybe I can use it like a surfboard. So I tried it. Didn't work. You know, I moved and I tried to get what would be considered radical and move it around. And it didn't move around, but I did get bounced back vertical again, standing up. You know, I tried to lean way over and I pushed back in the middle. Kept doing that. That seemed kind of interesting because I remember doing it a couple of times, bouncing, leaning way back, trying to turn the disc, but it didn't move. But something pushed me back straight again. So, well, anyway, then I was told, don't do that. And I said, okay. And the way they told it to me was a type of, I guess you might say, a sternness in, not the voice, but in the telepathic instruction. So we went on. And then I could see, wow, there was something that looked almost like Nautilus shell, but big, huge, and with the same iridescent colors that it possesses any of these types of abalone shells, Nautilus shell, you know, you could see it. Wow, it's beautiful. So we entered where it would be like an opening under the shell. The Nautilus shell, that would be where the animal would be, but it would be like an empty shell. So he moved in, said, wow. We came to a point in which all the levitators stopped and we walked, jumped off and walked around. And as we walked on, went to another little point. And it also interesting, the corridor was curved. The inside, outside followed, so it was a spiral type of entryway, looking at the iridescence of the pearlescence. It was really nice. It was beautiful. And then my guide said, this is where I can take you. That was it. And the demarcation point was where the floor changed, and there was apparently carpet. I remember not having any shoes or anything on my feet, and being able to feel the carpeting. It was like a carpet, soft, and it was nice, and very different from the other floor, which was more like a tile floor, wood floor. But this would be like carpeting. I said, wow, you have carpeting in here. They turned, and it didn't say anything, and I began to realize, hey, this must be some kind of a zone. Anyway, as I passed certain areas in the spiral, I began to get images being sent to me telepathically or from just walking past some of these zones that would play our troubles, the humankind's troubles, the man's inhumanity to man, the warring. Then I began to think, they're going to give me a lot of lecture and problems. So anyway, I kept on walking, and then they had taken their seat to the innermost chamber, which was on the inside. And as I walked in, I noticed every one of them had their own seat, and there were no extras. And I said, oh, gee, so there's no place for me. Except it was, there was an area that was like a stage, and it was fairly high above the rest. I think maybe about 4 feet above, or 3 or 4 feet higher. So I was told to walk up there, and there was one chair, and I sat in that one chair facing all of these people in purple, and I said to them, I said, you can't blame me for all the problems of the human race. You know, I can't understand why those things happened, but I really don't know how we could have stopped them. those things are terrible, yes, and our people are doing terrible things to each other, yes, and it's, you know, I came on, but you know, you can't blame me. I really don't. It wasn't in control of the situation and everything. And they looked at me, and hearing my discourse on the frailties of humanity, and yet defending it to some extent, anyway, as I came to the end of that discussion, they seemed to be very sympathetic. They really understood my position.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't know why I was there. I was just looking at them. And I kept looking at them as, and I began to think, your head, your brains are outside of your head. It looks that way. They kept saying, no, they're not. And I said, can I touch your head then? And I said, no, we cannot. And one of them looked at me and he says, wait, let me help you with this. And then I suddenly realized that we had connected in a different way. We were sharing our mind.
Mm-hmm.
He was sharing mine and I was sharing his. And as we shared this common position, I could move his hand and his arm where I wanted it. So essentially, I ended up feeling like I was feeling my own head, but watching his arm move over his head in exactly the way my arm would be doing it, except my arm wasn't doing it. My arm was still to my side, and instead, I was moving his arm and feeling his head, and I could feel tactically the feel of the texture of his skin and his skull underneath, and the physical touch was enough for me to realize that he indeed had a physical material self, and I could share that with him in this supernatural way of mind sharing. And, well, anyway, this was very interesting to me.
Mm-hmm.
And I asked him, then you're real people, but you're most powerful of all, I believe, that I have met so far. And they looked at me and just kept looking at me. And I said, I don't know why I'm here. And they just kept looking at me. And I looked at them, and each one of them had definitely their own face. One was a twin. Everyone was different. There was quite a few of them. I don't remember counting the exact number. I know there were three rows. And I'm not sure exactly how many people were in a row, but maybe at least five, and you know, they probably could total them to maybe 17. Well, anyway, that's a guess, so an estimate. I really didn't, like I said, count the number. But for a while, they just kept looking at me, and I began to feel the heart of the group. They weren't angry. They were sad. They were really getting sad. And I said, then I realized they were really, really, really getting sad. And I said, why are they so sad? How can I help you? I began to think in my mind, and my heart began to arrange itself in wanting to see if I could help them in any way. And then I said something. I said, I get it. You want me to help you. And then they smiled, seeming like some of them actually had a real smile on their face. Others of them had their eyes lighting up. And I said, okay, I'll help you. I'll help you all. But I don't know what I can do for you. But I just knew they wanted my help. no, I can't. I wouldn't know how to help you. So you have to help me help you. So that's exactly what has been struck, an arrangement. So I took that as pleasing them. And then they began a chorus of very simple sounds. And as they began to sing, blue light, purple light actually, bluish purple light began to emanate from the foreheads, the top of their heads. And soon it sort of looked like smoke, much like how some of the temples have a lot of incense and there's no wind in the temple. It's sort of like you see it sort of spiraling up and as smoke would spiral up, and it filled the whole space with purple light, purple what smoke is. And as it did, and they were singing this song, I began to really get caught up in it. And as I got caught up in it, they all began to walk up one at a time over and move toward me. And then each one of them passed over me and presented their consciousness to me and mine to them, essentially attuned themselves to me. And then when the last one had finished and shared himself with me and me with them, I went unconscious. And then my guide was there. Next thing you know, my guide was there. And he woke me up and says, okay, you're finished, time for you to go. So then they were all gone. They were all, had all disappeared. I still was in search for God. I knew that they were not God, but they were very high beings. They were angels or what, I really didn't know. Moving on, walked out, we went on reverse trip, riding the levitators, and then we went into another room. And this is a very large room. It was like it could have space for a lot of people, and there was one very special being in there. I thought, maybe I'm going to find God now, and maybe this is really where they're going to show me God or something. Well, anyway, it was glorious. It was fantastic to see, because the light in the room was radiant and filled with color, rainbow light. It wasn't a light show, but it seemed very, very full of light. And in the midst of that, in the middle of that, was what appeared to be a knight, a very wonderful, very regal-looking person. And he looked like he had his armor, or his armor looked like a praying mantis, except he had a grand helmet on top of his head. Because I got that feeling because of his big reddish eyes. And I said, wow, his armor was like golden. So I said, well, that's pretty cool. Now I can see golden, metallic looking armor. Then I realized, oh, wait a minute, this looks like a praying mantis, but not, you know. So it's pretty big too. It's like way up, sitting on a throne, way up high. This could be God, because the glory is, I mean, what he was surrounded in, the light, his appearance, tremendous. And then I was about to bow my head down, and then I might have tilted my head just a little bit. And then as soon as I had done that small bow, he returned the bow very deeply. And I realized he had more respect for me than I really knew what it was. He knew what I was. And I was thinking maybe I was going to have a conversation with this being, much like I may have had with others before.